We now turn to Michael Mooker, who left home at the age of 15 with his girlfriend Toria. He has now started his own business, Indigenous Growth, working with companies like Sky City and Fletcher Building. I began our interview by asking Michael why it's important to partner with business to provide cultural-based leadership programs.
It's all about restoration, right? Restoration of Māori and mana for our whānau. So in regards to our people, they give the best of their times, the best of their time to work, and then their families get the rest. So if you want to become a better version of yourself, sometimes you actually need to learn that type of stuff when you're at mahi, at your highest energy times. So I think organisations have a responsibility if they want people to bring their whole self to work and have that intrinsic motivation to perform higher and to be more productive and have that diversity of thought, then, man, they need to develop our people. So to be a better Māori, right? To be a better Māori, and work helps you become a better Māori, because that's where you get, you spend your best energy is at work.
So how does it help the businesses in terms of their own growth as a company to have these employees who are Māori be, as you say, the better version of themselves?
So there's a huge gap in terms of productivity amongst our people. So even our Māori and Pacific, 90 to 95% of our people aren't even making it past team leader or senior, you know, to middle management, let alone senior management. So there's a big productivity gap amongst our people, despite knowing that, you know, when there's a tangi, we're very much high performers. We can manage conflict, we can manage budgets, we can cater for hundreds, yet we can't become leaders of leaders. So in terms of that bottom line and the organisation getting more out of their workers, there's a huge gap of potential that's there that can really help lift the morale and actually lift the productivity of each organisation that they're missing out on every single day.
How do you make that work in terms of the programs that you run with businesses? Talk us through that process.
So, for example, if we are doing a Māori leadership program, it's a bespoke program, it's a unique program to our people. And we always take it in terms of the concept of a student athlete, right? So if you're at school, you've got to be a great student in order to be a great athlete. That's the same with our whānau. So especially in mainstream organisations, how do we make them strong within themselves as Māori? So they become, therefore, they become an even stronger leader. Because a lot of the companies that we work with, you know, they're not attracting as many people that are connected, like yourself there, Matua, you know, into those organisations, right? People are falling into those jobs because they just want a job. So it's around making them reconnected, but also showing how they can take it into work, take it into meetings, showing how puno tika aroha creates courageous conversations and delegation and all of that type of stuff, so they see the practicality within their day-to-day mahi.
How accessible have businesses and companies become in terms of wanting to embrace, to undertake the programs that you're talking about now?
Yeah, let's just say you have to be quite a brave organisation to be able to go through that, because we don't do this snowball approach where, you know, as organisations, first they'll do a bit of cultural competency and then te reo, and, you know, they try to do a little bit, but when you have a snowball, it just gets bigger, bigger, bigger. But there's also some twigs and stuff that get in the way, and, you know, and that's called that cultural fatigue that a lot of our people experience in there. Where we take the avalanche approach, like do something really, really big, and that impacts throughout the organisation quite quickly. So it's definitely not for the faint-hearted. It requires organisations who are brave, who are willing to admit that even though their intent is great, their execution is not happening, right? So they require to be brave, they need to have strong advocates within the organisation, and then they need to actually care about the development of their people, of their Māori or their Indigenous people in terms of that. So that's where that empowerment or that hand-up approach really, you know, really, really helps.
What role does Te Reo play in the way that you run these programs?
Well, we always say that we don't do Te Reo Māori or Tikanga in terms of our program. We are leadership development or capability. We use Indigenous values. What we do know is by the end of the program, They're, you know, there's some words like Māori and tapu and mana and pono tika aroha that there's no English definition, like it has such a broader meaning. So it's more around the power behind the words, the more meaning that it has, rather than, you know, like this is a courageous conversation model, etc. So even though it's not a te reo Māori or tikanga or cultural competency approach, it's your reo Māori or your tikanga will enhance, no matter what your scale is, whether you're matatau or whether you're very much on the beginning of your journey.
What are the basic building blocks that companies or businesses must have before you will engage with them or work with them?
So a lot of it's around intent, you know. So if they do have the intent and they're ready to be vulnerable, so even when we're talking to the CEOs, you're the CEO of your organisation, not necessarily the CEO within this area though. So intent has to be number one. Then involvement, so it's quite a huge thing. So they need to make sure they're willing to select the right people. We get the executives involved all throughout, all the way to the point that there's a graduation from 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. And, you know, trying to get senior management out for that amount of time. And then making sure that it's something throughout, because once our people become taniwha, it can be quite intimidating. So what's the support base that they're going to have for our people as they develop, as they move forward, and as they get promoted into higher roles?
You use the word vulnerable. I'm interested what that means in this particular context. What does a business's vulnerability have to look like for you so that you'll then engage with them or work with them?
When we talk about vulnerability, we know a lot of our executives or a lot of our people in these leadership positions, they like to play from a power of strength. So when we have something that's there to include those who haven't been included or that have been excluded in their current ways, because it's unfamiliar to them, it means that they don't know too much about this area. So we need them to be comfortable in that. Like, they don't have to be a thought leader or an expert in this area. They almost need to trust us in this process in terms of developing our people. And that's the kind of vulnerability, is to have enough humility to know, well, we're not doing this properly. It's not about exclusion, so that's a lot of them. You know, I just had one CEO 2 weeks ago going, oh, thank you very much for being inclusive, when we were doing our workshop and we were bringing people who were non-Māori or non-Pacific on the journey with us through the ways that we tell the stories. And I literally replied, I says, well, we're very used to being excluded, so we want to treat people how we want to be treated. Even though for them, you know, they like to play from a power of strength, and this is never an area of strength for them.
It's interesting because there's always this kind of new approach of this quadruple bottom line approach to business now, right? It's about planet, profit, purpose, but also people. Tell me how you do that process with CEOs from the initial meet all the way to signing up and getting the program started at work. How long does that kind of process take?
Our main people that we work with are the chief people officers or head of HR or head of learning and development, because they're all about developing people. So those are our main clients, as you might say. In terms of the roles for our chief executive, a lot of organisations out there are always asking us to go, oh, can you develop our senior executives, our CEOs, etc.? And we go, well, you guys get developed a lot. Why, let us develop our people and give them our tools first. And as a result, instead of leading our executives to water, what they're doing when they see our people thrive and they come in and see the result of what empowered Māori, Pacific, Indigenous people look like, then you're now making the horses thirsty. So they're not doing it because they have to, or they're not doing just because it's the right thing. They're doing it because they want to. And that's the journey that the organisation is making as well.
How complex is it for you to write a bespoke package or program for each individual business? Because it's not just the same cookie cutter approach, right? Different businesses have different needs, different numbers of Māori employees, Pacifica employees, and therefore you have to do it a different way. How complex is that for you?
There's actually two things that are similar across most mainstream organisations. Number one is that there's a bias for our people within organisations, so we need to know how to navigate that. And second is that there's some limited learned beliefs within our people. So those are the two things that we're navigating that are actually similar across all organisations, across all industries. We're in about 11 different industries at the moment, and those things are the same. So if we knock those two things out, customising it to each industry and organisation actually becomes the fun part, because that's when we get the organisations involved. But those two things, no matter whether you're the employer of choice, so we've got Air New Zealand, who's like the employer of choice pre-COVID for all of our people, to organisations that our people just fall into those jobs, for example, retail or supermarket and stuff like that. Even though all of those things are similar, those are the two things that are in common, as in regards to the values or the biasnesses inside organisations, but also the learned beliefs that are holding our people back in terms of breaking that ceiling.
It's interesting you use that term, glass ceiling. You actually specifically say your systems, when you're talking to businesses, your systems and structures create a double-glazed glass ceiling for Indigenous people. That must be quite confronting for businesses when you talk to them in that way. How do they respond?
That's where this brave or vulnerability part comes in, right? So it's very much up to us as well. We know in regards to our organisation that we sometimes have to build a bridge so they can understand it and come over and talk in their language so we can look after them on this journey. But sometimes you do need to have those really tough conversations. And then really acknowledging them that it's not because it's done on purpose. We know, we always assume that it's positive intent, but we just want to reinforce that some of these bias that's in there, it really helps them because that's their blueprint. But for us to try and copy their blueprint to success, we always use this metaphor. It's like us writing with our non-dominant hand, right? It takes longer, it doesn't look as good, and we put in a lot more effort and we're not even getting to somewhere, a destination that we like, when we're writing with our non-dominant hand. So it's just a matter of that storytelling and those anecdotes to support even our organisations.
You're listening to RNZ National. I'm Julian Wilcox, filling in for Kim Hill. We're talking to Michael Mooka, who runs Indigenous Growth, a consultancy company that partners with businesses to provide cultural-based leadership programs. Michael, where did all this come from? Where did all this evolve from, this need that you're now doing with your life and running and partnering with businesses to give growth to leadership for Māori and Pacifica, for Indigenous people within businesses? Where did this evolve from?
Yes, and I know the people who organised this, First Foundation, I want to acknowledge First Foundation. They provide a hand up in terms of scholarships for people with financial hardship, and giving them a mentor and a partnering organisation. So mine was ASB Lending Services, and just giving us an opportunity to go through tertiary education, etc. So where this all came from, it actually came from them, who they don't give a handout, they give a hand up. And when you come from a mindset of my upbringing, which, you know, that imposter syndrome, I'm always in the back of my mind, I'm a nobody. But it allows me to play the cards that I have to the best of my ability.
Why do you say you're a nobody?
When you grow up in a poor house, when you grow up in an area where the stereotypes of Māori that are portrayed is actually your lifestyle, and then you see people who are amazing, you know, leaders like yourselves or people that that have te reo and tikanga and all of that. And, you know, you've been around for so long, but you don't know who they are. They don't know who you are. But you're just trying to do, you know, everything that you can with the cards that you've got, right? And these people allow you to either play the cards you do have or give you another card so you've got better cards to be able to play, if we use that analogy.
Tell me about your upbringing, because you said that you grew up in a poor household. Describe that for me.
Yeah, and if I could take that out, I didn't know, right? Because when you're in a big Māori family, you're just that's just how it is. But you're talking around violence, you're talking around gangs, you're talking around four families in a four-bedroom house, you're talking around things where, you know, we didn't have culture alive, you didn't know when your next meal was going to happen. You choose to run away with your partner, so my now wife, and, you know, we moved out and made ourselves, you know, when we were about 15, so we could put ourselves through school. So education wasn't a big thing.
Wow.
Just to challenge those systems because we wanted better.
So, right? Just so I'm clear, you and your partner, is it Toria, is it?
Yes.
Left home at how old? At 15?
Yes.
To give 15. Yourself the best chance possible to be able to go to school.
Exactly, because we didn't see people that finished school. We didn't see people that went to university. We're about 15 at the age that you're supposed to leave school so you can support your family. So we're rebels because we wanted to continue to go to school, if you get that. All right? So, yeah, and she's now my wife, so we've been doing this. It's always been us versus the world in terms of that.
What was your family, the whānau reaction when you left home at that age, simply to be able to continue your educational journey?
Yeah, some of it was in terms of, you know, you're being selfish. How are you going to help the family? Some of them didn't know. Both families just thought we were at each other's family's house. So even our schools didn't know that we were on our own till I was very fortunate to be head prefect, and my wife was a prefect at her school at year 13 or seventh form. So they didn't even know, you know, that we were staying in a car or people's garage or, you know, a bit of a plug-in for West Wave as well, having showers there just to try and buck this trend because we wanted something different and better.
How were you supporting each other? What were you doing? Were you having to work at the same time that you were going to school, her being a prefect, you being a head boy? How were you supporting each other?
Yeah, so the herald delivery in the morning at 3 o'clock, go to school, landscaping in the afternoon. Western leader, my wife used to work at, you know, Zero Subs. You know, we just do everything that we can. And, yeah, I was very fortunate to get a job with a partnering organisation through First Foundation. So at, you know, when I was about 16, 17, working with lending services. So you just grind, right? And you just make it work. I would tell my story all the time and just get people to believe in me, those people in the interviews, to go, please give me a chance. I want something. I want to do something.
So you're working two or three jobs, your partner's working at the same time, as well as going to school, as well as trying to find time to study. How did you manage all that together?
I guess we were just angry. So we did what we had to do to prove a point. You know, that's probably it. Also, when you talk about these things, people start believing in you, and they might not be your family. They might be your community. You know, I had a Pākehā mentor who showed me what it was like to not worry about paying the bills and roof over your head. So you start popping these bubbles that you were tied to all the time. So you had other people who you never knew that they started going, wow, look at these two. And you started attracting different things and different mentors, which then showed like, hey, there are people out there that have achieved things that we want to achieve.
And both schools, your partner's school, now your wife's school, and your school, Kelson Boys, didn't know that you were both living in this situation at the time.
No, it was actually quite funny. It was just when I was named head prefect and they wanted me to buy a blazer. The school blazer, which was about $300 with only a week's notice. And I was like, that's going to take me a while.
Yeah.
And that's how it came up. And they go, what? I said, oh, yeah, we've been doing this on our own. And they were just,
wow.
How did you, shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be head prefect. I said, this wasn't a goal, you know. So, yeah. And they just ended up giving me the blazer.
Wow. Mm. And so when you talk about things like, you know, kaimahi, Māori kaimahi, workers in businesses who are little whakamā, even though they're kings and queens on the marae, I mean, goodness gracious me, in the kitchen, I mean, it's like running the army, right?
Yes.
This is all born out of your personal experience, the life experience that you have lived in terms of where you were brought up, how you were brought up, where you were living at the time that you were at school, that kind of thing. This is where this evolution for Indigenous growth comes from.
Yes, well, you know, we can look at all these awesome, amazing role models. Or we always say role Māori, role models out in the community. And you're in there too, Matua Julian. We can always see that, but our greatest role models are the people at home. You know, and we noticed one thing, and it was about in our early 20s, that we noticed, despite our upbringing, all four of our parents had jobs. You know, so we're thinking around homeless, we're thinking around people in prison, all those statistics. But see, we never felt, all four of our parents, yet they work 60, 70 hours a week, right? When we never saw them happy unless they were at the parties, right? We barely saw, you know, if there was university, they would go, oh, you better get a scholarship, son, or else you're not going because we can't afford it. You know, so we noticed that they were our greatest role models, and they're not even happy. Like, it's not even a viable option to get a good career when you can't even get past team leader role in organisations. So for us, that's where we saw this real big need. Instead of going into our community, what happens when our people no longer turn to crime, or what happens when our people don't want to be homeless? What's the next option? Because when you see people that are doing really, really well and they're Māori, you either do exceptional or not. There's no middle ground for us. And that's what we want to be able to do. Well, how do we get our people, the real role models, so when they go home, they don't just say, oh, you know, when their son goes, hey, how's work, Dad? Oh, work's work. Another day, another dollar. Thank God it's Friday. Right? They're actually excited when they go home and they have energy to give to their family, so they know that they can, you know, if you're a GM, you know, your nieces, your nephews, the least they're going to be is a GM of an organisation, or a radio presenter, or an entrepreneur.
Michael, I wonder if there's an opportunity for a flip here, because as you say, when a lot of our people go home onto the marae, they run the kitchen like it's a military procedure and process, and they're absolutely fabulous. I wonder if there's an opportunity for a flip here where we start taking CEOs and senior leaders back onto marae, because I've done that before with a couple of people, and they're just blown away by the way things run at home, as you know, particularly on some of our ngāpuhi marae, right? The way that these things go, where everyone, it's a voluntary workforce, everyone's doing it for the kaupapa and the well-being of the marae, and obviously for the manaakitanga of people, and these CEOs are just blown away by it. I wonder if that's something that you've considered as a part of Indigenous growth.
Yeah, exactly. I even go to our people and say, don't tell me you can't take their leadership role.
Yeah,
I've seen you in the kitchen. I've seen you run a whole tangi, even at the most, in the worst time for your whole whānau, and you're doing conflict management, you're doing, you know, we're not even teaching them that stuff. A lot of it is them just applying for roles, right? So there's a confidence within our people, but yes, I know one senior leader who went to a tangi, right, and saw this one lady who's you know, that auntie in our families, yeah, who's running the whole thing, and he goes, we're starting a new distribution centre in Māngere.
Yeah.
I need her, because she's, you know, look at her running all these people, plus smiling and doing all of that stuff. And I says, yes, but you don't know that lady, she works on the front line, right, in a rubbish collection agency. You wouldn't even think that she could be a leader.
Wow.
You know?
How do you deal with this huge tanifa that seems to afflict many Māori called whakamā? How do you break that down? You know, there's a saying, tūwhiti a te hopo, feel the fear and do it anyway. How do you help break that down for kaimahi within businesses?
So just for our people, we use the phrase, you know, around humility, and we take the word whakaiti. And I just think our people have taken the word whakaiti to make yourself small, just to the extreme, you know. So we sometimes change that to whakanui as well, to go, well, actually, when you apply and you put yourself in a position where not many Māori are, you're now setting the pathway. So you need to succeed, because when you succeed, we succeed. And we're kind of flipping that around the opposite of humility, right? Like, hey, to be humble is actually for you to win. Please win.
But how do you do that, Michael, with that fine balance between whakaiti and e kore te kumara e kōrero mo tōna reka?
Yeah, and I think that's the kupu is the balance. So in our kaupapa, we really challenge that. We go, we want to be humble, we're just overrepresented in that, and now it's a weakness.
Michael,
and we've really connected.
Michael, your long-term goal is to start working with other Indigenous communities around the world. How do you think that might work? Because are they necessarily transferable solutions internationally, the way that you're running the programs currently?
Yes, simple answer. Yes, because the biasness in mainstream organisations are the same. The things that are holding our people back or that we're not utilising as strengths are the same. And the statistics are the same with Indigenous people worldwide. Yeah, so I know that they would connect more with our Indigenous or our Māori values than they're currently connecting with the mainstream or Pākehā or PhD values that are constantly or that are currently in the leadership development arena.
Michael, we wish you all the best. Congratulations on the work so far. We wish you all the best for the future. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. E hoa, ngā mihi nui ki a koe.
Ai, tēnā koe, Matua.
Matua, eh? Kia ora tātou. That was Michael Moka. Michael mentioned in that interview that he was given mentoring by the First Foundation, and these days he's a mentor himself through the foundation. If you want to learn more about the work they do, you can head to our webpage, rnz.co.nz/Saturday, and we've posted the links there.